KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset, starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkin up to Castle Cape, today west winds 20 knots, seas 5 feet. Tonight west winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. And Friday, northeast winds 20 knots, seas 3 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, today northwest winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet. And Friday, north winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, today northwest winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight north winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. And Friday, north winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Port Hedland and Nelson Lagoon, today west winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet. And Friday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, today west winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Tonight variable winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet. And Friday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, mostly sunny with highs near 47, northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with lows near 38, north winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And Friday, mostly cloudy with highs near 46, north winds around 10 miles per hour. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There was a high tide at 4:50 a.m. at 8 feet 1 inch, a low at 12:12 p.m., a minus tide of 1 foot 8 inches, a high at 7:06 p.m. at 5 foot 6 inches, and a low at 11:42 at 3 feet 3 inches. Your sun rose at 6:04 this morning, and your sun will set at 11:17, bringing us up to 17 hours and 13 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day. It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset, starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkin up to Castle Cape, today west winds 20 knots, seas 5 feet. Tonight west winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. And Friday, northeast winds 20 knots, seas 3 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, today northwest winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet. And Friday, north winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, today northwest winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight north winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. And Friday, north winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Port Hedland and Nelson Lagoon, today west winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. Tonight variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet. And Friday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, today west winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Tonight variable winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet. And Friday, variable winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, mostly sunny with highs near 47, northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with lows near 38, north winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And Friday, mostly cloudy with highs near 46, north winds around 10 miles per hour. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There was a high tide at 4:50 a.m. at 8 feet 1 inch, a low at 12:12 p.m., a minus tide of 1 foot 8 inches, a high at 7:06 p.m. at 5 foot 6 inches, and a low at 11:42 at 3 feet 3 inches. Your sun rose at 6:04 this morning, and your sun will set at 11:17, bringing us up to 17 hours and 13 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Coming up on KUCB News, a cargo ship that caught fire near Adak is still burning, and commercial fishermen are struggling to afford the insurance that protects their livelihoods. Stay tuned.
Support comes from GCI, introducing GCI Plus Internet and Mobile to help customers stream, work, and connect without limits. Terms and conditions apply. Details at gci.com/gci-plus.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. It's Thursday, June 5th, 2025. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk, with some local news from Unalaska. A cargo ship that caught fire near the remote Aleutian island of Adak on Tuesday is still burning. The crew of the Morning Midas was rescued with no injuries, and the ship was abandoned afterward. As of today, the ship remains afloat, and there are no reports of pollution on the water. The Morning Midas is reportedly carrying thousands of vehicles, some of them electric, and large amounts of fuel. The ship is being monitored remotely through its onboard satellite-connected systems. That means its location can be tracked, but not the status of the fire. Salvage company Resolve Marine was chosen to respond to the fire by the ship's manager, Zodiac Maritime. A tugboat with a team of salvage specialists is on its way and expected to arrive at the scene around Monday. Responders plan to send out another firefighting tugboat with towing capabilities. The U.S. Coast Guard also sent a cutter and air crews to respond to the fire. Adak is about 400 nautical miles southwest of Unalaska. Commercial fishermen are increasingly struggling to find and pay for insurance that protects their boats and their crews. The state legislature passed a bill this session that aims to address the issue by providing another coverage option. Whether Governor Mike Dunleavy signs the legislation remains to be seen, as does its potential to help fishermen across the state. The Alaska Desk's Avery Elfelt has more.
It's a warm, sunny day in an otherwise dreary southeast spring. Cynthia Adams is catching up with fellow fishermen in the Haines Harbor several weeks before the summer salmon season.
Yeah, come to work on my boat!
Her boat is a cream-colored stern picker built in the mid-80s. It's called the Lady Hawk.
Actually, we can come in here, so... Sorry, it smells a little bit like a fishing boat, but...
The boat has earned the smell. Adams has fished for salmon in the Upperland Canal for 25 years. Over that period, she says, all of her operating costs have soared, as fish prices have stagnated. Amid the squeeze, she says, she's constantly weighing whether one of those expenses, insurance, is worth the price. This season, Adams says she'll pay about $500 per month for crew insurance, more than double what it was several years ago. On top of that, she paid more than $4,000 to insure her boat for the summer.
I haven't had to use it ever, and it just keeps going up and up and up, that cost. So you just have to stop and think, okay, is this in my budget? You know, is this smart?
Adams isn't alone. Insurance for commercial fishermen has never been cheap, but industry observers say the cost has exponentially increased over the last several years, a reality that's pushed state lawmakers to look at potential solutions. Some fishermen, like Adams, still purchase coverage each year, but it's a major financial strain. Others forgo it entirely, leaving them with no financial protection in a case of disaster. That's a risky situation, says Susan Erickson, owner of PW Insurance, Inc., an insurance agency based in Petersburg.
If it's your boat and you're a one-man operation and your boat sinks, that's your choice. But if you've got a deckhand that is injured on your vessel, you are responsible.
Soaring premiums aren't limited to commercial fishing vessels. Homeowners across the country and world are facing the same issue, as inflation and intensifying natural disasters spur billions of dollars in insured losses every year. But a major challenge in commercial fishing specifically is that there's a shrinking set of companies willing to offer policies. That means each insurer is taking on more risk and can be pickier about who they cover and at what cost. Maddie Lightsey is the owner of Alaska Boats and Permits, a marine brokerage firm based in Homer.
It has actually tanked purchases before because people have been unable to get insurance and their lender won't fund. And that's just a full stop. And they thought they had a boat to fish for the season and they don't.
The issue has grown so urgent that lawmakers are hoping to do something about it. Both chambers of the state legislature recently passed a bill that seeks to provide fishermen another option. Governor Mike Dunleavy has yet to sign the legislation, but if it becomes law, the bill would clear the way for Alaskans to form so-called insurance pools, or co-ops. Those allow each fisherman to contribute a smaller sum of money to a larger pot that the co-op uses to pay claims. It's not a new concept. Similar entities have operated out of Washington State for decades, and many fishermen in Alaska, including in Haines and Southeast, have joined in, says Lightsey.
Because the savings are so significant, like it really truly is sometimes, you know, half the cost or maybe 60% of the cost or something compared to private insurance.
But the co-ops aren't a silver bullet. They're really picky about who joins. And by definition, every member is on the hook for accidents they may have had no role in. Still, some regulators and lawmakers say there's good reason to clear the way for Alaska-based pools. Among them is State Senator Jesse Kiel, who represents Southeast communities, including Haines. He sits on a seafood industry-focused legislative task force working to boost the struggling sector.
Having more control and more options, options close to home, that can only benefit Alaska fishing families.
It's increasingly important, he says, amid rising costs and depressed fish prices.
As the fleet grays, it really needs to be possible for young folks to start up or maintain a new commercial fishing business here in Southeast Alaska or anywhere on our state's coast.
Back on the Lady Hawk, Adam says she looked into joining a co-op at one point, but at the time, it didn't seem like the pool would reduce her costs. So she's continued renewing her policy with a private carrier and paying more year after year. At least for now, she says, the math isn't working out in her favor. Reporting from the small boat harbor in Haines, I'm Avery Elfeld.
Three officials from the Trump administration visited the beginning of the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline on Monday, alongside a gaggle of foreign nationals and business officials. Interior Secretary Doug Burgum, Energy Secretary Chris Wright, and EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin spoke to a crowd of oil workers at a gathering in Prudhoe Bay. There, they celebrated the work underway to develop oil and gas in Alaska. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early was there and has this report.
Donning hard hats, bright safety vests, and goggles, dozens of North Slope oil workers gathered in freezing conditions to hear from a trio of high-level Trump administration officials. The event began with a prayer from Crawford Putkatuk, chairman of Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, and then a hymn.
Some of you guys might have heard it before. It says, it's a song, Give Me Oil in My Lamp, Keep Me Burning. Remember that one? Give me oil in my lamp, I pray.
Putkatuk used the song to illustrate how oil wealth has changed the lives of the Inupiat people in his community.
All them years, our Eskimo people were singing, give me oil in my land. And the Lord is faithful. So we got a lot of oil under our feet. Thank God for that resource. And that resource has changed the lives of the Inupiat people from third world conditions.
Senator Dan Sullivan traveled with the Trump officials and said it's notable for so many cabinet level staff to be in the state for so long.
This is the dream team, man. This is the best our country's had in terms of energy.
The group was there to promote Alaska's position as a source of petroleum for export and to focus on removing barriers to developing the state's energy resources. Specifically, they advocated for boosting oil flow down the Trans-Alaska pipeline and constructing a new pipeline to transport North Slope natural gas to markets overseas. The gas line would run parallel to the oil pipeline for much of its 807-mile route and would take natural gas from the North Slope to a port in Nikiski. Energy Secretary Wright says oil is the most used energy source on the planet, and natural gas is the fastest growing. He says President Trump wants to increase the production of both in Alaska.
If we free Alaska and the people here, we're going to more than double the oil flow through the pipeline and build the big, beautiful twin, the natural gas pipeline from the North Slope.
It wasn't just American government officials on the tour. Foreign energy delegates from several Asian countries, including Japan, Taiwan, the Philippines, and South Korea, were visiting the pump station, with U.S. officials hoping the quality of the oil pipeline would encourage foreign support for the gas line. The challenge, as always, is finding the money. Building a gas line in Alaska has been the goal of state officials for decades, but the cost is currently estimated to be $44 billion. Wright says the Alaska Gas Export Project has an advantage compared to competing projects in other countries.
You need to build a pipeline here that you don't for other natural gas projects. The flip side is all of the gas production needed to completely fill that pipeline, it's already flowing from existing wells. It's just reinjected under the ground. So you don't need to develop a gas field to feed this pipeline. The gas already exists.
Interior Secretary Burgum deflected a question about whether the federal government might help fund the project. He said he thinks the state is in a better position to invest since it has a sovereign wealth fund, the Alaska Permanent Fund. All three officials cheered the president's goal of more energy production, with Burgum putting it in a global context.
It's the foundation of prosperity for our country. It's also the foundation of prosperity for our allies. And when we can have enough energy for ourselves and then sell energy to our friends and allies, they don't have to buy it from our adversaries.
While Trump officials touted oil and natural gas development in Alaska, they downplayed the potential for renewable energy. Recently, Interior officials paused more than $150 million for renewable projects in the state, including a wind energy project in Kotzebue. Burgum says those projects are currently under review.
One of the challenges, if you've got alternatives, wind and solar are intermittent. They're highly subsidized. They're not profitable, particularly wind. Doesn't seem to scale. Solar could over time.
The three Trump officials are also participating in Governor Mike Dunleavy's Sustainable Energy Conference, being held in Anchorage through Thursday. Reporting in Prudhoe Bay, I'm Wesley Early.
Tune in tomorrow at noon and 5 right here at KUCB for a new episode of the Bering Sea Barometer. Reel in the real-life experiences of fishing the Bering Sea with your host, Captain Pete Naton. Be sure to check out our other new series, too. It's called Amplifying the Aleutians. We interview longtime Channel 8 TV and KUCB alums for a glimpse into the history of the station and, by extension, on Alaska itself. Find all episodes of both shows on our website and on Spotify. Let's take a look at what's happening in Unalaska this week. Youth wrestling camp kicked off earlier this week in the high school small gym. Coach Rainier Marquez is teaching future Raider wrestlers the fundamentals of wrestling until Friday, that's tomorrow, from 1 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon each day. Kids from kindergarten through 8th grade are welcome. Deacon Anthony Lakanoff will present Russian Orthodox vestments on loan from the Orthodox Diocese of Sitka and Alaska at Unalaska Public Library tonight from 6 to 8 o'clock. This Museum of the Aleutians showcase offers a rare opportunity to view these ceremonial pieces in person and learn about their significance in Orthodox traditions. Friday is the deadline to register for this year's Camp Kanayu. The annual culture camp is open to youth in 4th through 12th grade. Call the Kawalungan tribe for more info at 907-581-2920. The Museum of the Aleutians will open its new exhibit, Aleutian Mysteries, the Science and Story of Unalaska's Sea Ice, this Friday evening from 6 o'clock to 8. This all-ages event explores the scientific and cultural significance of sea ice in Unalaska region through the museum's changing gallery. The Museum of the Aleutians will also host bears, walruses, and seals, oh my, this Saturday afternoon from 1 to 4 o'clock, featuring researchers from the Unalaska Sea Ice Project. Visitors can learn about ancient animals that lived around Unalaska 5,000 years ago, view traditional Unanga hunting tools, and participate in educational activities suitable for all ages. And finally, the Museum of the Aleutians will host STEAM Storytime, Polar Bears, this Sunday morning starting at 11:30. This educational story time focuses on polar bears and other polar animals, combining science, technology, engineering, arts, and math concepts through engaging readings. For info on everything else happening in town, check out your community calendar at kucb.org. That's the news from Unalaska. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk. For more local coverage and community events, check out our website at kucb.org. Stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you next week.
WMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
A Kodiak fisherman was sentenced last month to a year in jail for illegally shipping diseased tanner crab from Alaska to Washington. The Alaska Beacon reports that Corey Potter will also spend 2 years on supervised release and will be barred from commercial fishing anywhere in the world during that time. As reported by KMXT's Brian Venois, the sentence comes after a federal investigation found that Potter told his two boats' captains to move crab harvested in Alaska to Seattle for higher sale prices, which is illegal. Both captains also pled guilty last year to violating the Lacey Act, which bans importing possibly harmful wildlife like the diseased tanners. Potter's boats, the Arctic Dawn and Gambler, had nearly 4,300 pounds of live tanner crab and nearly 3,000 pounds of golden king crab on board. Kyle Potter was issued a $20,000 fine and faces 5 years probation and a worldwide ban on commercial fishing. Justin Welch paid a $10,000 fine and was sentenced to 3 years of probation. According to a press release last week from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the captains knew some of their haul was, quote, almost certainly infected, close quote, with bitter crab syndrome, which is lethal to crabs but not to humans. The parasitic disease can be identified by crab shells turning red or orange, as well as the blood and flesh having a milky look to it. None of the crab made it to market, according to reporting from the Beacon. They were instead seized by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and sent to a landfill. The Alaska Beacon reports the government is also seeking nearly $190,000 in restitution, and a hearing on that is set for July.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Amid serious conservation concerns, Yukon River communities are headed into another summer of near-total salmon fishing closures. And as KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, it doesn't look like the situation will improve in the near future.
Aside from a possible brief opening to harvest summer chum salmon, 2025 will be the sixth consecutive year of total salmon fishing closures on the Yukon River. Beginning June 1st, the first of a series of rolling salmon fishing closures will go into effect on the lower Yukon. The closures will then work their way upriver, following Chinook and summer chum salmon on their journey toward the Canadian border. As in recent years, residents will be able to harvest non-salmon fish using 4-inch set nets, considered small enough to avoid catching salmon, but not totally able to avoid incidental catch. But even those nets will be limited for periods of the summer. Yukon River Federal In-Season Manager Holly Carroll explained in a public hearing hosted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in May that a 2-week complete gillnet closure put in place last year to protect Chinook will likely be extended.
Chinook harvest in some areas did still increase. And so for this year, we think a 3-week closure at the height of the Chinook run, time to move upriver with the Chinook, would better protect them and might reduce some of that incidental harvest that's still occurring in those 4-inch gill nets.
According to Carol, the 4-inch set nets used to harvest non-salmon will also be limited in the later part of the season to protect fall chum and coho runs. Beginning July 16th, fisheries managers plan to limit their use to a 3-day weekend schedule. As part of the recent hearing, residents of communities along hundreds of miles of river shared about the loss of culture and economic hardship faced as a result of the salmon closures, as well as the health issues that come with an increasing reliance on non-native foods. And the restrictions reach far beyond the mouth of the Yukon River. Residents of Hooper Bay and Chivac, more than 100 miles away, echoed many of the same concerns as Yukon communities, but also expressed doubts that their coastal harvests were directly impacting the river's stocks. Carol explained that ocean harvests of Chinook by the coastal communities have historically been small. She said more research is needed to understand run composition, but that tagging studies have shown the restrictions are biologically justified.
The truth is that the entire Yukon area, all the fish passing that area, are very likely to be Yukon-oriented because of the timing of them coming past your villages. They're unlikely to be completely Kuskokwim or completely Norton Sound. So we have to protect them.
Overall, the total Yukon River Chinook run is projected to be roughly 72,000 fish. Just 30,000 of these are expected to make it across the Canadian border, where an international agreement was signed last year to completely suspend the harvest of Yukon River Chinook salmon for 7 years. The fall chum salmon run and much smaller coho salmon run are also projected to fall well below what managers consider a harvestable surplus. In 2024, both species saw their third lowest returns on record. The summer chum run, a small bright spot for some Yukon River communities in recent years, is likely to meet the upper end of escapement goals. If opened, harvest would be limited to less efficient, selective gear like dip nets that allow Chinook to be released alive. But federal and state fisheries managers, who together manage the river in a patchwork, have agreed on a cautious approach due to low run sizes in the years when the fish's parents spawned. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has issued an emergency order aimed at slowing the harvest of rockfish in North Gulf Coast and Cook Inlet waters this summer. To head off a potential overharvest, the department has cut the number of pelagic rockfish that can be retained from 3 to 2 per day and limited non-pelagic rockfish to 1 per day through September 15th. Pelagic rockfish, like black rockfish, move up and down the water column searching for prey. Non-pelagic rockfish like yellow-eye stay on the bottom. Retention of yellow-eye rockfish will be strictly prohibited through June to protect them during their reproductive cycle. The new limits are an attempt to account for displaced fishing effort, according to the emergency order. Guided charter boats in Cook Inlet have traditionally depended on halibut and salmon for their clients to catch. The department says populations of both of these desirable species have been in decline and catch levels have been so low, charter operators have had to look for different quarry. From 2023 to 2024, harvest of black rockfish in Cook Inlet increased by 17%, and the harvested of the coveted yellow-eye rockfish shot up by 35%, according to data from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Limits on king salmon and halibut harvests for the fleet are even more restrictive than ever for 2025, and as a consequence, the department is expecting the Sportfish charter fleet will further increase its rockfish harvest. Rockfish live long lives, and they grow and mature slowly. Black rockfish live to be 50 years old and are not mature until age 6. Yellow-eye live to be 118 and are not mature until they reach age 22. Biological composition data compiled by the department shows that a high percentage of the harvested rockfish are sexually immature. suggesting that a compositional shift of the slow-maturing fish is already taking place. Their sampling also shows that rockfish are homesteaders, that is, they often live their entire lives in one small area. This increases their risk of overexploitation.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
A 9-year-old has won the Sitka Salmon Derby for the second time in 3 years. Caleb Gray brought in the biggest fish near the beginning of the 5-day event, and no one else ever came close. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Caleb Gray is standing on the weigh-in barge in Sitka's Crescent Harbor Sunday afternoon as the seconds count down toward the end of the 70th Sitka Salmon Derby. There's always a chance someone might come charging in right at the wire with a bigger fish, but no other boats are in sight. Caleb sounds the horn, bringing the derby to an end and sealing his victory. It's deja vu all over again as he performed this same task 2 years ago as a 7-year-old.
Sound the horn. That's the unofficial.
Gray will take home $20,000 prize money if the result stands, and it likely will. His 34-pound king was over 2 pounds larger than his nearest competitor. Todd Nevers will take second place with a 31.8-pound king. Jeremiah Johnson will take third with a 30.8-pound king. All results are unofficial until the awards ceremony on June 12th in Harrigan Centennial Hall. With a one-fish bag limit, this was not the largest derby, but participants did surprisingly well despite gale-force winds that blew through on both weekends. 155 people fished in the event, turning in 312 kings, weighing an average of 15 pounds. Collectively, that makes about 4,700 pounds of fish. Only 12 competitors turned in a fish each of the 5 days of the derby. That kept total poundage averages below a more typical event with a larger bag limit and better conditions. In addition to his third-place win, Jeremiah Johnson will claim the total poundage prize with 101.5 pounds. Riley Bernhardt, who won total poundage in 2019 as an 11-year-old, is in second place with 96.7 pounds. And Kerry Gray will take third with 95.7 pounds. Kerry Gray is the mother of 2-time champion Caleb Gray. Their boat, by the way, is the appropriately named Relentless. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at madsen.com/Alaska.
Early in the morning, millions of discovered without warning. So he could show a girl just how much he cared. He always knew just what he could do. He always knew that his dream would come true. Telephone, never be on your own. Many, many years ago, he started something with his first hello, hello. Alexander Graham Bell. Alexander Graham Bell. Alexander Graham Bell. Well, you knew darn well that you could find the only way to talk across the USA. Telephone, telephone.
KSDP is generously supported by Precision Airways in Sandpoint, Alaska, offering chartered air services throughout the Aleutians Eastboro and beyond. For more information on charters and prices, Theo is available at 907-989-4080. Precision Airways is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
are tuned into 830 AM KSDP, 88.1 FM K201 DA in Kinkov, Alaska, 88.1 KFPS.